brought to you by Burr and Foreman, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth Gordon and Lee Cantor.
Glad you've tuned in to Business Radio X for this special edition of Results Matter. Today we will be discussing the upcoming T-SPLOST vote. For those of you who are not familiar with T-SPLOST, this is the Transportation Special Local Option Sales Tax, and it's a hot topic here in the city of Atlanta. With me in the studio today are Rob Hill of Hill Corporate Partners, Bert Brantley of McRae and representing Maven, Mitch Kaminer of the Atlanta Board of Realtors, and Mike Alexander, Atlanta Regional Commission, as well as Greg Harley with Burr Foreman. Thank you all for coming into the studio for this discussion, and I'd like to start with Rob Hill of Hill Corporate Partners. The Transportation Investment Act of 2010 creates the opportunities for residents to vote on the T-SPLOST bill. Rob, give us a little bit of background on the legislation and why it's so important to Atlantans.
Well, I think the importance is that Atlanta has always had a transportation problem. Atlanta was born out of a transportation problem. There was nothing here to speak of, to speak for the place as a regional transportation hub, other than the fact that the state of Georgia was building a railroad from what became Chattanooga to somewhere on this side of the Chattahoochee. They actually hammered a stake about four blocks from here and said, this is it. The other private railroads were to build to that point. There are no rivers here. There's no particularly good lay of the land. And since then, Atlanta has grown. Many people talk about Atlanta being an unplanned city, and I changed that. I'd say Atlanta is an unexpected city. Atlanta's never expected the kind of growth that it has, and it's always outgrown it quicker than it thought.
We are quite a successful unexpected city.
Yes.
So the kind of growth that we've seen, absolutely, the more the merrier, and we want more people to be moving into Atlanta and doing business in Atlanta. So give us an overview of the Transportation Investment Act and T-SPLOST.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting about it is, first of all, it's regional. It's regional focus. Many times we think of Atlanta as being Atlanta and not Canton or Jonesboro or Marietta, but really we've outgrown that as an economy, as a nation. And I think we'd all agree with that you really got to take into account that what happens in Marietta affects Metro Atlanta. What happens in Lawrenceville is going to affect Canton. And so this really took a 10-county approach to what can we do to solve it, not just to get it to the county line or the end of the city limits. So I think that was extraordinary in and of itself. And the fact that they went ahead and divided the state into, 12? Mm-hmm. 12 regions? And the amount of grassroots support, I think 200,000 Metro Atlantans contributed thoughts to this, and then every mayor of the county seats of every one of those, as well as the head of the planning commission, sat on a board on the round table. The regional commission has put a great amount of resources behind this. This has been a couple of years. I think it was passed in 2010. So here we are in 2012. So we had a couple of years of really intense work with intense feedback. I don't think that it's usually these types of civic improvements tend to come from the top down, and that's sort of been Atlanta's tradition as well. I mean, heck, we had a professional baseball stadium before we had a professional baseball team, and so but this is really a grassroots effort that comes from the ground up, and I think that in and of itself, plus the regional thing makes it an incredibly unique and valuable process.
Now, Burt Brantley, you're here representing Maven, which was created solely for the purpose of educating voters about the referendum. So obviously, like we've been saying, it's something that every Atlantan is involved in and informed about. Why was it so important to encourage people to go out and vote?
I think one of the interesting points that that we were just talking about is the business community has really led the state into allowing the people to vote. If you go all the way back really to the mid-2000s, business generally wants government to get out of the way. And business came to the state and said, you're getting in the way by not investing in transportation. And you need to fix this because it's hurting our ability to create jobs and to get our employees to work and to move our goods around the state. And so the business community really led this out. We struggled for several years down the legislature. There was a statewide plan. There was a letting counties join together plan. We wrestled with it. It came down to the last day a couple of times, literally midnight with votes, and it didn't happen. And finally in 2010, this regional plan, kind of a compromise from the two plans that had been talked about, finally got the approval of the legislature and signed by the governor. And it was actually a discussion about having the vote in 2010, in November of 2010. And the economy was terrible, and decision was made to wait because we thought that people might not want to support more investment in a bad economy. So we're now here at 2012, and you've really had not just 2 years of work, really, 6 or 7, 8 years of work by the business community, leading out, and which Atlanta is known for. Our history has shown that the business community really can lead the leadership here to make something and make our city great by implementing public policy. So with that background in mind, our group is really intent on trying to make sure people know there's a vote. It's a summer vote, which people go on vacation and are doing things during the summer. We're trying to remind them there's a vote, remind them there's early voting and Saturday voting and all things you can do, absentee voting, to get out and make sure they know the vote's coming. And then also go to the project list and really understand where these 157 projects are and how they will impact their commute so they can make a decision for themselves whether to support it or not.
Okay. So the vote is the plan to raise the $8 billion for transportation improvement projects. And this consists of, it's not just one project, obviously, because of the nature of what we're talking about here. It's 157
projects all over the 10-county metro region. In addition to that, 15% of the money will go back to the local government where it was raised. And so you've also got local projects, sidewalks, repavings, all the things that local officials and local drivers and commuters will see in those local improvements as well. So you've got kind of a two-step process. You've got these 157 projects that the regional roundtable got together and unanimously approved. For a regional group to unanimously approve anything in Atlanta is an incredible feat. And so for them to approve that, and then you've also got this 15% of money that will go back to the counties and the cities to make those local improvements on those local streets, things like sidewalk intersection improvements and repaving, those kind of things. So it's really it's a broad list. It's balanced, I think, across the metro region and across types of projects. And if people go to transformmetroatlanta.com, which is the Maven site where that interactive project map is, I think they can see in their community where the projects are, but also region-wide some of these really major bottlenecks that are going to be addressed.
Mike Alexander with the Atlanta Regional Commission, let's bring you into the conversation here. Talk a little bit about the Atlanta Regional Commission and what your involvement and role has been in the TSPLOS issue.
The Atlanta Regional Commission really is the Metropolitan Planning Agency for Metro Atlanta. We wear many hats. Transportation planning is one of those most important hats to us, along with land use planning, aging planning, water planning. We work at these different geographies. Now, the vote we're talking about July 31st is really the 10-county area. So the 10-county area is our core planning area for the Atlanta Regional Commission. So those are the 10 counties we've been focused on critically through our work, the modeling work we've done to look at these projects and see what their potential impact will be, how much congestion relief they provide. One of the things that we really come to understand at the ARC about this is this project list really addresses system improvements. When you go out and meet with people and you talk to them and they're thinking locally, you really have to bring them back to this idea of what a big scale project really means. The easiest one, I think, for people to understand is really 400 at 285. You know, who really owns 400 at 285? Everyone does, right?
Right. Clearly, the influence that infrastructure has on the city.
Right. And if you look at
benefits for all of us, no matter where you live.
Exactly. So we'll look at, say, Henry County, Georgia. And you'll find that there are literally thousands of people that leave Henry County every day that need 400 at 285, which is actually a north side project. In fact, I've got maps here in the room today with us to show that if anybody wants to look at them. So what we do in addition to looking at these projects is we take those projects and we put them into our modeling tools and we look at the economic impact of what those projects mean long term. What you were talking about, business productivity. Because at the end of the day, we want to move people and goods as fast as we can around metropolitan Atlanta. So when you talk about congestion, it's about congestion relief. It's not that we save somebody 10 minutes every trip, but we save them a little bit of time every day, and those days start to add up to years. And when we take that into account, we know, using our software tools, that it'll add up and pay for itself very quickly in additional economic growth. Really what we've learned is that if we can build this project list and get everything done by 2025, over the life of our plan out to 2040, that the regional economy will grow by an additional $34 billion above what we already forecast at the ARC for regional growth. So that's the economic value of these transportation projects. So if you put that in context, if we're going to spend about $8 billion and we know the economy is going to grow by an additional $34 billion, then that's a strong return on investment.
So, Mike, when the Atlanta Regional Commission looks at prioritizing these types of initiatives and what's most important, how do you make those decisions about what's going to be the most important thing affecting the future of the city?
Well,
region.
Clearly congestion relief is always implied in our analysis of projects. So when you talked about the projects themselves being selected, we started with a list that was close to $30 billion. And the politicians meet, and they went through a great process from the staff's perspective to whittle that list down to the core projects that they most valued to this constrained list that will actually be voted on. And that list is now a matter of law. That is the list that you're voting on, and the politicians work through that with the staff, talking about what these projects mean to come up with the list, and then we model the benefit of that.
Okay. And Mitch Kaminer, you're here representing the Atlanta Board of Realtors, also with RE/MAX Paramount Properties. Welcome. Now, talk about the purpose and the mission of Atlanta Board and Realtors and why TSBOST is important to you.
Sure. Well, thanks a lot for having me here this morning. The Atlanta Board of Realtors is a trade organization. We are proponents for private property rights and for fellow realtors out there, trying to help them do business better, more efficiently. And basically, this referendum is huge for us. We're a big proponent for it. Bringing it down to everyday, you know, the person out there, the layman out there can relate to, you know, one of the main reasons why corporations don't move to Atlanta, we lose corporations moving here, is because of traffic. When you lose corporations to other cities, that impacts the amount of jobs that are created here in Atlanta. When the amount of jobs that are created here in Atlanta isn't impacted, then you have people that can't afford houses, and you have people that are losing houses because they're losing jobs, and there's no replacement jobs for them. So it's very cyclical. Then those houses go into foreclosures, they're distressed sales, they have short sales, and it creates a bad housing market for Atlanta. So you could see why we are big proponents for this referendum. We want this passed in a big way. And you know, the housing market, once a house is sold, a house that sells in Atlanta, it puts $60,000 into the local economy for every house that's sold. Which is huge.
So the real estate market, residential as well as commercial, has a huge impact on not just the economy of the city, but the perception of the city as people look at moving into the market. How are Atlanta home prices currently stacking up? And is the perception of the traffic or transportation within the city an important factor?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's, you know, many working families, they move far from work to be able to afford a house, because the further they move away from you, typically in the inner city, they can afford more of a house. And it's kind of like the drive to you qualify phenomenon. And Atlanta does really well with the affordability of a house. You know, people can afford a house. It's nationally known that housing here is very affordable. But what happens is there, when you combine transportation into that factor of affording a house, then Atlanta doesn't do very well. As a matter of fact, we do very poorly. So basically, people are moving further away from their workplaces, but and to afford a house, but then they're commuting longer. Their commutes are longer, which, you know, talking about time, money and gas, less quality of life, spending with their families. We do very poorly with that. So that's another reason why this referendum is extremely important.
And, you know, it's really interesting. We found that the average commuter in Atlanta spends $924 a year in wasted fuel and wasted time sitting in congestion. And so one of the things that we're, you know, really talking about with folks is, A, because of the great work of the ARC, we know that, and letting them know that. And then, B, you know, this isn't a discussion about a tax or not a tax. And we're already paying a congestion tax. And it's something that we can't control. We sit in traffic. It costs us money. It costs us time. There's nothing we can do to get around it unless we create options for people and give them the ability to either ride a train or do all the things that you can do instead of sitting in traffic every day. So I think that point is really important that while we have affordable housing, we have very expensive transportation costs, and you can actually by some estimates maybe even potentially save money if your commute is really impacted by one of these projects. You could actually save money with the extra penny you pay on your purchases. You might save in terms of gas prices and time that you spend in traffic every day. So, you know, people know that. They know they spend time in traffic, but having the numbers to really drive that home and let people understand, they know they waste money, they know they waste time, but having those numbers is really important to educate people and allow them to get that information so they can make a decision about whether to support the referendum or not.
Well, Mike made a good point there when he talked about efficiency for businesses. If a business can save its people 20 minutes a day, just 20 minutes a day, you know, that's a 5% increase in productivity. Now, a consultant's going to come in there and say, if you've got a $3 million, you know, revenue company, that's $150,000 that goes to the bottom line. That's not the way, you know, many people think about it, but that's a tremendous cost out there. And then the other thing is, and I'm sure you know this, Mike, is that it's the unpredictability of the traffic. I tell everybody in Atlanta, you're either 30 minutes late or you're 30 minutes early, because you've got to plan to be, you know, for the traffic not to be bad. Sometimes that's worse, you know. And, you know, so you show up a good half hour early, but you also got to plan for that, you know. And I think somebody did a study recently and said there's a 250% swing on a regular basis in travel times.
It is amazing, and it's something everybody that lives here knows and experiences on a day-to-day basis. Now, Greg Harley with Burr Foreman, we've talked about a number of things that require a legal perspective, from legislation and taxes to business growth, commercial and residential real estate. Tell me a little bit about some of your thoughts and the way that Burr Foreman has been involved in T-SPLOST initiative so far.
Right. Well, Our market is primarily the middle market business community. We do a lot of work for lenders and developers and whatnot. And it's just exciting to see the business community and the local governments come together to support this. I've been living in Atlanta on and off since 1976, and just the fact that we've gotten to this point is truly remarkable. I mean, I remember when Metro Atlanta was just considered five counties, and it shows you a lot of what planning is today, since it's now much larger than that. We get involved in a lot of economic development, and I would say the three big factors are education, pro-business environment, and transportation. And where Atlanta, whether rightly or wrongly, is sometimes maybe doesn't have the best reputation is transportation. I mean, our traffic is somewhat nationally known, although people in L.A. envy our traffic. But
that's a critical point.
It's not that big a difference. I've been in L.A.
No, L.A.'s traffic is on a scale that we can't imagine right now. I talked to their
right. So it is something that, I mean, all of the top cities in the United States and really around the world are currently facing as we look at more and more people living in an urban environment and facing this. But how we stack up against the rest of the pack.
And what I think it's important for people to understand is it's not something we're just thinking about, unique to ourselves. Atlanta is in competition with Orlando, with Charlotte, Jacksonville, you name it. And if we're not willing to make investments in infrastructure to allow ourselves to win that battle, we're not going to see the businesses come to Atlanta that we need to be there.
And those other cities are making the investment. I mean, I think Absolutely. As we've looked around the country and you've looked at places like Dallas, which is that we compete with Dallas regularly for business, for economic development, Charlotte, Denver, Salt Lake City. I mean, a lot of these metro areas have done this exact thing. Now, not on the scale that Atlanta has done, because we've involved 10 counties, essentially our entire what we consider the core metro region, and so it's a little bit bigger scale than other regions have done. But you go to Dallas now, there's a light rail system that they have. You go to Denver and you go to Charlotte and Salt Lake. I mean, they have all invested in transportation because they see it as a competitive race, and we have to be careful not to fall behind. We have been the envy of these regions for so long, and we have the potential now to actually fall behind as these other regions make these critical investments.
Yeah, and I want to echo that point because these are critical things for anyone thinking about this vote. This competitiveness issue is very real. We hear it from the economic developers all the time. Everybody has a congestion problem, but it's what we decide to do about it that's going to be critical in the front lines of site selection and business selection. We need to be able to say that we're addressing congestion in a real way in Metro Atlanta. That's what we have to be able to say every time we open the door for new businesses.
And whether it's workforce or whether it's transportation, you know, business looking at Georgia, they don't really care. Well, they care, but they're not concerned with traffic today or the education system today. They're worried about the traffic system 10 years from now and 20 years from now, because that's when their employees are going to be here. That's when their business is going to hopefully be succeeding and thriving. So it's not as much, where are you at today, but where are you going and what are you doing to address that? And that's why we've seen all of our competitor regions virtually do something very similar to this. And we're, now a couple, 3, 4, 5 years behind many of those regions in making these investments.
And in about the efficiencies there, they use that same tabulation to come in and say, look, you're going to add an extra 20 minutes to the commute of your people. That's a 20% loss in productivity. So that same little $3 million revenue company now is going to lose $150,000 a year. That's a strong argument and one that people can't ignore.
You know, if you want to put a face to this a little bit figuratively, these corporations, they have CEOs. These CEOs are human beings. They're going to live here. They're going to live here in Atlanta. When they make a decision on moving their company, their corporation, to a place where they want their employees to work and live and enjoy, traffic is number one. Traffic is number one, and they're going to realize, their wives are going to have to commute every day. They're going to have to commute every day. It's a big decision, and it hits home.
Now, Greg, in terms of economic growth and as you're advising clients in the mid-market on decisions that affect the growth of the economy in their particular company, and how important is this issue in the future economic development of Atlanta?
Well, I mean, it's critically important. And, I heard earlier we were talking about the number of jobs that would be created, and it's both short-term jobs, which we desperately need in the transportation and construction industry, but think about the ripple effect that's going to occur when it's easier to get from place to place, more businesses locate, and that in turn just causes more and more growth to occur. So it's vitally important.
Now, anytime you're talking about tax, there's going to be a negative side, right? And there's going to be people that are opposed to this issue. What are some of the reasons somebody might not see the benefits necessarily or not be willing to vote yes for this important
issue? So the Maven group has been out. We've got a speakers bureau that goes out and speaks to groups. And what we do is we catalog those questions that come up and look at them and try to make sure we're tailoring our message to address the concerns that are being raised. So we see a lot of these questions come up. And, you know, to a large extent, the older population is skeptical of benefits for them because we're really talking about a 30, 40-year window here of making our region more competitive. And then there's certainly an anti-tax, anti-government kind of fever out there because of some of the policies in Washington. And what we remind them, and I think we talked about the background of this earlier, you know, Georgia has really changed from a blue state to a red state. We're a very conservative politically state now. And as we've seen that, our leaders and particularly our state legislators have allowed the people more of a role in decision making. So we've seen local splossed elections for education buildings and for transportation, building courthouses, and I mean we've got all of these programs around the state where we have kept taxes low, income tax. We have a fairly low income tax rate. And we've kept all these other taxes low, and we've went more towards a consumption-based based tax. And so, and this is another example of that where, you know, the leaders at the Capitol said, you know, we'll let the people create a project list. We'll let them give input. It was an exhaustive process the ARC went through to let virtually 200,000 people give their input. And then we put this list out to the voters, and we let them decide. And so it's really – we've seen a shift between the old days where, again, the politicians would make all the decisions. You know, one of the things that we hear a lot about is, you know, the 400 toll, and you know, broke a promise there. And what we remind people is a politician made that decision. A politician made the promise, and a politician broke the promise. Here, the people are getting to make the choice. So you really have a choice here of letting the people decide what they want to do, or putting it back in the hands of politicians. So those are some of the ways that we address, you know, some of those concerns that are out there. Again, you know, trying to let people understand the whole picture, see the whole picture, so they can make a decision on how they want to vote.
What an exciting aspect of our democracy that people not only get to decide whether or not there's going to be a tax, they're getting more or less to decide what it's going to be used for. Mm-hmm. And I think that should resonate with people. It's not so much whether there's a tax or not, but to get to see the benefit of it and to make the decision. And so that's, to me, a really unique aspect of what's going on here.
Yeah, I'd like to see this kind of involvement and accountability on where my money goes with other taxes. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that impressed me was the citizens' oversight that was implemented here with this program here, which I don't know if anybody knows about this, but that's where the Speaker of the House, the Lieutenant Governor, to appoint a committee of non-elected officials who are going to oversee the budgets, publish an annual report on each one of the projects, not only just how the money is being spent, but how the timing is being done and the scheduling, yeah. So that the public will not only just simply vote on this and then sit back and say, well, you know, now it's just going to be done for the next 10 years. They're going to vote on it, but they're going to have a chance to monitor it as well.
So there's a lot of participation from the people on this, which I agree, it's great to see, and you'd like to see more of that in all aspects of government.
And I think the things we as citizens value about the bill were things that politicians put in the bill, that the tax is a 10-year tax, that if the tax is going to be renewed, we hear this, it'll be a never-ending tax. No, that's just not true. The bill clearly states that the tax ends after 10 years, and it has to come back before a vote of the people if it's ever going to be renewed. So the voters have that power. And that's really getting at that 400 mm-hmm. issue that we experience when we're out talking to people. And again, this tax in particular, people wonder how much is going to be collected. There's a forecast for how much the tax will generate. And that's actually a matter of law now as well. Mm-hmm. So the state economist makes the forecast for how much tax he expects will be generated, and that is the amount that will be collected. If we collect it earlier, then the tax stops, and that's it. And if we don't collect enough, then the tax will stop as well at 10 years. But I can tell you, working with the state economist, it's a very conservative forecast. The numbers on sales tax are already above what he forecast, so it's highly likely we'll collect the tax slightly earlier than
And with this exact same process that we've seen with these county-level SPLOST votes for transportation and for infrastructure, government buildings, courthouses, those kind of things, and then the education SPLOST, which they build school buildings and those kind of things. So it's the people are very familiar with this concept of a voting on a specific project list and funding that project list with these dollars, and then you know we don't know what's going to happen in 10 years. We don't know where we're going to be. If you know, we may find you know that the granite in Stone Mountain is worth more than gold, and so maybe we won't need any money. I don't know, but you know, who knows? The leaders in 10 years will make the decision: has it been successful? And then you know, how do we keep addressing those transportation problems going forward? And whether it's a vote for to renew this tax, or whether it's a vote to do something else, you know, it's hard for us to guess at this point. But as we know right now, as Mike said, and it's something we repeat over and over and over to people, it is a 10-year window, and unless we collect the set amount of dollars beforehand, that's when this tax will expire, and it would take another vote of the people to continue it past that.
So there's been a lot put into the way that the legislation was crafted, and to make sure that it's really going to serve the citizens of Atlanta and the region and not just be part of a political agenda. When you look at planning these things out in the future due to a lot of the unpredictability, what are some of the things that from a political standpoint, from a legal standpoint, from a business standpoint, need to be put into place to ensure that, you know, it's done in the right way, that you avoid some of these issues that you all have mentioned?
I could probably start, but I think I'll take a couple people to answer. That's a big question.
Opening
but
up
it's a great question. It's a fundamental question because people want to know that what they're voting on will get built in the simplest sense. The fact that the law requires a project list is your first critical thing to acknowledge and say that's the way it should be. There is this list. The list has to be built, and two agencies are responsible for building it, GDOT and GRETA. GRETA will handle the transit. GDOT will handle the roads. And I can tell you at the staff level, they're already working through the process of if it did pass, how do we do the scheduling to get it built? And GDOT will say they're actually, very, from my perspective, very sophisticated already in saying we're going to build to cost, right? And that's a critical way of talking about it. It sounds simple, but you've got to get your mind around there's not going to be any project scope creep or any of the stuff that you could potentially have happen. You've got this fixed amount for the project. We're going to build the project in that amount. And that's a big step for them, and they're doing a, you know, from our perspective, a great job at getting ready if it does pass.
And I think a key point on that too is that it's essentially a reimbursement process. So they will draw the funds, GDOT will draw the funds from the sort of the account, if you want to call it that, as the projects are built. So, you know, we get a lot of questions about, oh, well, this money's going to, you know, sit and it's going to line some pockets and they're going to use it for this and that and they're going to use it for other projects and all this kind of stuff. And it is very clear. And I think, you know, again, we go back to this very conservative legislature that we have and their writing of the bill that was so crystal clear and very specific about how these things are going to operate. So they will essentially draw that money out. Like you, when you're building a house and you draw on it as you go through the phases of building, it's the same exact thing with these projects. As they build the projects, they'll draw the funds, and we have the Citizens Oversight Committee that'll be watching that and doing yearly audits and reporting back to the people to make sure that it's done the right way. So yeah, I think that this move that we've had in our legislature led to that bill being written and is very tight in terms of how it will be addressed, because these folks had to go back and explain to their constituents why they voted for it, and they wanted to make sure it was a very right process that will lead to a good outcome.
Yeah,
I have a question. Does anybody here know the stats on the amount of jobs that this bill is going to create?
Well, yes.
Yes. So Mike's group has done some great work on that.
Let me add one additional point to that. And one of the things that really, when you're building a major transportation project and you're using federal funds, there really are a lot of hurdles that you have to go through. And I wouldn't want to misstate that. I'm I can't begin to explain the hurdles that you have to jump.
They don't just write you a check?
They don't just write you a check. There's the NEPA process, the National Environmental Policy Act process, and that really can add years to the construction of a project.
And dollars.
Yep. So what we're really talking about with this potential sales tax is that all of that time goes away because you're using your own funds. Mm-hmm. Now, you still got to meet all the regulations if you cross the stream, all these impacts. But those processes and the time it takes to get a project built are substantially reduced. And even for me as a citizen, that makes me feel really good about getting things done.
I definitely want to get to Mitch's question, but the other point I'll add about that is right now there's a lot of uncertainty in Washington about funding. They've got a transportation bill right now they have not approved, and we keep getting these continuing resolutions. So we really don't even know how much money is going to be there for states and for cities and for regions to even draw down for federal aid projects. And so this is really us saying, you know what, we're taking care of our problem ourselves. We're not going to wait for you guys to figure everything out up there, because it doesn't look like they're going to figure out anything anytime soon. And so we're handling our own problem. And to the projects that could qualify and other needed projects that aren't on the list, we could get some federal aid projects there. But really this is about us taking care of our own problem. We have created this with this incredible growth that we've had, and now we're going to go a long way to fix it ourselves and not wait for somebody else to hand out and get in line and all the things that we've been having to do over the years, which is why we're 49th in terms of transportation spending per capita in the state, because we have put a priority on trying to draw down every federal dollar that we can, and that drags out time and it drags out dollars, and we end up spending less than virtually everybody else. So I think Mike is exactly right. It's a very key part of this, and it's something we talk about very regularly when we're out.
So by doing it this way, we're able to act faster and independent of what's going on.
And we set the priorities. We don't allow the federal DOT and Federal Highway Administration to set our priorities for us. They essentially, it's a carrot kind of approach. You know, if you build this, we'll give you this money for this. And now this is us saying, no, we're done with that. We're going to make our own priorities and put the list out for the voters, and we're going to build what we need to build, not what you think we need to build.
And ironically enough, at the federal level, they're coming around to that way of thinking, that they're not going to invest in a local government that's not already investing in itself. Mm-hmm. That all these places that have already done sales taxes are ahead of us in the future way that you get federal funds, because they're just not going to give you the money automatically anymore. You have to be very competitive to get it.
You have to show you've got skin in the game.
You've got to have a lot of skin in the game to get especially transit funds now.
Well, and we do, and part of the reason we do have skin in the game is the jobs issue. So coming back to that point, can we put some numbers around the projections there?
If you remember, I talked about our modeling, and obviously you guys don't want to hear the details of how the model actually works.
But you've got a lot of spreadsheets there.
We do love spreadsheets at the ARC, but we've invested heavily in a model called REMI, and it's kind of the state-of-the-art econometric model on this planet. There really isn't anything else like it. And it was a big investment for us because we know, we get these questions, what are the economic impacts of transportation infrastructure spending, literally? And so we ran those projects through the model, and one of the outputs is regional job change, because the model knows if you're saving the business community this amount of time, that's a factor in our model that feeds back into labor access and commodity access, which are those kind of detailed items I try to stay away from. But that's what influences the model. How easy is it for labor to get to a job or a commodity to get to where it needs to be? And when you take that into account, you change the network, you make those things better, there's a positive benefit for business and jobs. So we know over the long term, the life of the plan, because these projects get built and are programmed to be built really in 10 years. But the benefits accrue really out until our forecast horizon. That's something we have to explain to people over and over again, that it's not just that the project opens one day and that's the only benefit. A transit project has a 30, 40, 50, 60-year life cycle, right? So these are long-term investments, and there's long-term job growth returns. So if you take all the jobs that are created and then maintained, you're looking at 200,000 additional job years of employment over the life of this plan, and that's created or maintained, because we don't want to double dip and say if it's just new jobs. Well, this job, gets created because of these projects, and then it might exist in multiple years. So 200,000 jobs will be generated as a result of this project list that's created and maintained, because they may exist in more than 1 year, right? And that's the way the real world actually functions. You create a job, and then hopefully it lasts for more than 1 year.
Right, right, exactly.
And you want the credit for that, because it's really, to us as you know, people that think about economics, it's that person is employed for multiple years. Mm-hmm. So, and as you talked about construction, this is a big construction program. Really, construction sector is really the leading sector coming out of the model in job change, over 34,000 jobs directly attributable to the project lists themselves. Those are good middle-paying jobs. But the real value of this is really the middle and high-paying jobs. Two-thirds of all the jobs generated out of this model, comparing this potential future, are in high-paying or middle-paying sectors, like professional and technical services, which, in fact, most of the people sitting around this room are actually employed in right now.
So it's very well-rounded in the areas that it hits the economy,
yeah,
multiple
levels. When you run models like this, you do hit run, and you don't necessarily know what you're going to get at the end. And that's been a fun process for us to see these results and know that the project list itself was moving in the right direction. Because if the project list wasn't hitting congestion, if it wasn't making travel times better, as we've tested it, I'm telling you, the model results would not be there. Mm-hmm. And that's a critical part of it, right?
Now, when we talk about that this is a long-term project and the way that it's structured, us taking the initiative to do it here within Georgia, self-funded tax, why is it so important that we took action on it now? Why is time of the essence now? What if we waited another year or two? What would be the impact on the economic model?
Well, first of all, there's the matching grants that the communities out there have. I think they have to give a maintenance grant for the state. If this doesn't pass, they're going to have to it's increased it by 30%.
Right. So the bill, the way the bill was written, they wanted to remember the legislature has a lot of rural influence still, and we get very focused on the Atlanta area, but there's still a lot of rural influence. So what they didn't want is just the Atlanta region to have a vote. And then no other region vote, because we have the Savannah Port. There's infrastructure needs down there. There's infrastructure needs really all over the state. And so what they did is essentially put in an incentive, so they make sure that every region at least had a vote. They got together and developed a project list. And so the first threshold to get some additional state matching dollars is to even have a vote. And so all 12 regions got together, came up with a project list, got approval from their regional roundtables, and move forward. So that was the first step. And then the second step is if your region approves the list, then there's an additional state match that will come on the state aid projects as well. So, you know, from a vote standpoint for this July, as the regions look at this, that's certainly one incentive to think about approving it. But I would think, you know, I think Mitch has talked about it earlier, and I think he's got the real story why we need to do it now, or if somebody might want to consider why to do it now, is because of our current housing situation and the current situation that we're in terms of getting home and getting to I mean, our home values have obviously mine has, I think everybody's has really suffered during this, and we need some relief on the horizon. And I think this, because of where the projects are and addressing some of these major bottlenecks, I know the realtors are convinced, they've been a great partner in going out and speaking on this project list, that it really will address some of our huge bottlenecks. It will allow people to get home faster. And if you can get to your house faster, that certainly makes it more marketable to somebody who may buy it.
Right. Greg, your thoughts on the urgency behind the matter?
Sure. You know, just think where we'd have been if in 1966 they decided, well, we'll build the Braves Stadium 5 or 10 years from now. We might not have a team. So, you know, the economy's picked up, perhaps a prudent move by the legislature to put it off. But as I mentioned earlier, I mean, it's a competitive battle. And if every, you know, I think one of our panelists said earlier, a city is either growing or dying. And I think that's the challenge for the Atlanta region, decide, you know, is it going to be in that growth mode? And we hope that it is.
And we've had a couple of I'm not the historian, but we've had a couple of points in time in Atlanta's history where we've seen this. And we've had the airport, and the decision whether or not to invest in a public airport. And a lot of people I've heard point to that investment and the difference between Atlanta and Birmingham today, and how Atlanta has grown and Birmingham didn't. And then you look at civil rights and how the business community really took a leadership role in that. And that was a critical point in time for Atlanta, for the South, but particularly for Atlanta. And then you look back at the Olympics and the decision there to make public investment again in bringing the Olympics to Atlanta and putting us on a world stage. So as you look through our region, our city's history, and by extension our region, we've had these points in time that now we look back and we go, yeah, of course, right? I mean, who wouldn't go for the Olympics? Of course you would. Who wouldn't be for civil rights? Who wouldn't build an airport? I mean, it's very easy for us to say that now. Who wouldn't build Lake Lanier? Now, of course you would. But at the time, these were critical issues of the day, and you had people with vision and leadership who made these decisions that you look back years from now, it looks very obvious, and we think, yeah, it was a no-brainer, but it really wasn't. And so
Are big fights.
Yeah, that's right.
You're exactly right. I mean, Atlanta was born out of a huge statewide project, which was to build a railroad from Ross's Landing, which became Chattanooga, to this place. It became Atlanta. Now, you look at it now, and it sounds fine, but you think about this, that railroad was called the Western and Atlantic Railroad. Nobody cared about what was in this part of Georgia. They didn't. For all the economic models they had at the time said that this was pretty much useless real estate. What they wanted to do was get goods from the Ohio Valley down to the ports, to Augusta, that then you could navigate down the Savannah River to Macon, where you could go down the Okmulgee and down to Brunswick, and later on to Columbus. Atlanta was just an area to get through, and the state of Georgia built the railroad from there. And you think about building it through the mountains, Etowah, and through that whole area at a time when trains were not what we think of them today. They were underpowered. They used wood, which meant they set the countryside on fire when they sent sparks going up. They had to actually stop when they ran out and get the passengers to get out and go get it, and collect the wood. They had the windows open. These people were tough back then, by the way, because they used to refer to the ashes and the cinders that came back as eye drops. You get the picture. That's not – I mean, even the – they hadn't even worked out how to do couplings yet. They just had links of chain between the cars. So every time you went forward, you got whiplash. Every time you applied a little break, everybody got a broken nose. So there was no this was to say it was speculative is to be generous. So Atlanta was sort of born in this, technologically advanced incubator. And today it's only gotten more acute. I know I go from being, cutting edge technologically to practically Amish, in a matter of months. And, the fact is you really cannot wait. At this point, we're already behind. And there are a number of projects, once a business has decided not to move to Atlanta, that's it. They're not going to turn around and change their minds and come back. Once somebody has decided to live someplace else, you can't get them back. That time is not a shelf item. You can't put it back up and resell it. So it's to put this off, and I know that to me, I look at it, what's remarkable is that the careful, thoughtful planning that's gone into this already. I think the information is there. There's really no reason to wait. You can examine this plan. It's been more forthright and upcoming. And believe me, I'm a curmudgeon. I've been a curmudgeon since I was 5 years old. I'd love to be against it. I like being against things. That's much easier. The more I looked at this, the more I said, this is how it ought to be done.
Right. You have to look to the future. And the city was born with people looking to the future and visionary. So where can people go if they want to educate themselves more around the issue? And most importantly, what do they need to do to take action?
Yeah, so I think one of the first places people should stop is transformmetroatlanta.com. That is the Maven website, this group that has gotten together to help educate people and inform them about what's going on. That site has all the information about the projects. It's got an interactive project map that's fantastic, and it's you can look lure down to your street and see if there's a project on the 157 project list. And so that's a great first step. There are the ARC has some great stats on there. They actually, there's a fact sheet on every project on the ARC's website, which I have used. I've got it bookmarked now over and over because as we go out and we talk to people in different areas of the metro region, they want to know what's coming in their area. So we literally take those fact sheets with us so people can see it's from here to here and it will do this and it will, you know, and so there's, I mean, there's plenty of information there for people who want to find out what's going on and really see, you know, like I said, make a decision for themselves about what does it make sense, or do these projects make sense, what impact will it have. And then the ARC's had some fantastic research to really give us a sense for what are the traffic delays going to look like, what are the job growth going to look like, what's our economic growth going to look like. And that's information that people need to be able to make those decisions.
Excellent. Well, it's time now for our Results Matter segment, and this is where we go around the room and everyone kind of summarizes their bottom line. What's the thing that you want people to remember most about the conversation today and your point of view and what they need to do about it? So we'll start over here with Mike Alexander with Atlanta Regional Commission. What's your Results Matter?
I think the results that matter show that we've analyzed this project list in detail. And if you go to our website, you'll see the results of that, and you'll know that there's a strong economic benefit to these projects being built. It's just that simple.
Excellent. Thank you. Rob Hill?
I think the thing that people really need to take away when I look at the objections that people have to this is not cowboy poetry. Okay, this is not a government boondoggle. This is, and the other complaint that people have is they think that it's all going to light rail and rapid transit. It's not. This is a great deal of this is focused on surface streets, widening intersections, rerouting streets that don't work. And we all know that, you know, Atlanta built on a horse and buggy model there. There are quite a few intersections that simply don't work. This is good bedrock. This is the function of government, and these projects are sound and not pie in the sky monorail from, you know, McDonough to, you know, Canton or something like that. These are good, solid, time-tested programs here that will going to benefit everybody. It's not just an expressway bill.
Important point. Greg Hartley.
I think the takeaway I get is, you know, this is an opportunity for citizens to decide whether they want to invest and pay for their own future. And that's just again, I come back, what a wonderful thing about our form of government that we have that opportunity.
Thank goodness for that. Mitch Kaminer?
Yeah, thank you. You know, in my mind, Atlanta lost its edge. You know, about 10 years ago, people just loved to flock here. They wanted to come. They wanted to live here. They wanted to bring their families, move here, get a job. I think we lost that edge, and we need to get that edge back. This is the first step to getting the edge back. We need the jobs. We need the housing market to recover, and it's very cyclical. It's the beginning, and you got to start somewhere, and this is where we're starting.
Excellent. Burr Brantley.
Yeah, I would just encourage people to really get informed about this. I mean, it really is a fantastic opportunity to learn about a public policy. There's plenty of information out there. You can really be overwhelmed by the amount of information, but we tried to cull it down and get to something where you can understand your area of the region and how it impacts you. So, you know, just – you know, get informed, get the knowledge that you need to make a decision in July. If you're going to be on vacation, make sure you know that early voting starts 21 days before July 31st. There's going to be a Saturday vote this year, the first time that we've had that in history, on July 21st, 10 days before the election. The polls will be open on Saturday. Very cool. I mean, we really, it's an incredible opportunity to participate and to get involved in the future of your community. So there's all kind of a ways to do that. Particularly, though, by voting and being informed and then turning out at the polls, either by absentee ballot, by early voting, Saturday voting, or waiting until July 31st and going to the polls and letting your voice be heard.
Terrific. If you're just tuning in, this is Results Matter, and I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You're listening to Business Radio X. We've been discussing the very important upcoming T-Splots vote on July 31st. Lots of opportunities to vote before then and lots of flexibility in that regard. I want to give a big thank you to my guests for this hour, Mike Alexander with the Atlanta Regional Commission. And what is the website for the Atlanta Regional Commission, Mike?
It's The one I remember easiest is the home one. It's www.atlantaregional.com.
Terrific.
Is our website, and you can get to all the transportation information from there.
Okay, fantastic. And Rob Hill with Hill Corporate Partners, commercial real estate, hillcorporatepartners.com.
That's it.
Terrific. We've also had Greg Harley here with Burr Foreman, burr.com, B-U-R-R.com, and Mitch Kaminer, Atlanta Board of Realtors. How can people get in touch with you, Mitch?
Two ways. My personal email address is sold, that's S-O-L-D, at winwithmitch.com. And through the Atlanta Board of Realtors, which is abr.org.
Fantastic. And Burt Brantley with McRae and also Raven, where can people get in touch with you,
Burt? So transformmetroatlanta.com has all of the information about the referendum. They can get request a speakers bureau, a speaker to come out to their event. I mean, just anything that they can do on that website to get more educated, more involved, we appreciate it. And we'd love the chance to come out and speak to groups and events and continue to get the information out about the referendum.
Fantastic. You're listening to Results Matter. I'm Elizabeth Gordon, and we will talk to you next week.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.